You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
Yep.
Listen live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York.
Yep.
The ESPN New York app.
Yep.
Or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.
The number one pick in the NHL draft, but the man that can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lars Eller!
I'm every trash, CMT for short. Wonder if we best once you peep the score. Up at the crack of dawn, top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise to shine with 98.7. This is drop time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Got Dave and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
We have made it to Wednesday. That is right, the 27th day of March, 2024. What is going on, everybody? It is DNR right here on 98.7 ESPN. Dave is off. Dan is in alongside my buddy Rick. 800-919-3776, the telephone number. RJ and Ray are along for the ride as well. And we are keeping you company for the next 4 hours. Lot to get to. The NFL conversation certainly has not gone anywhere. We'll have a lot more of that. We are one day away from the start of the Major League Baseball season, at least in the continental United States, as my friend RJ pointed out before the show today. Knicks back in action tonight against another hapless outfit in Toronto. And if you watched the Rangers game last night or listened to it here on 98.7 ESPN, the third period was absolute bonkers. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Daniel. Congratulations to the Rangers. First team to clinch the NHL playoffs.
That is correct.
Good for them. It's great.
Doesn't get you anywhere, though, once the playoffs start. You got to actually then keep winning.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, but it is a nice feeling to be, you know, a Rangers fan today knowing that you will be in the playoffs, unlike, you know, my Islanders.
Well, and the thing, too, if you're the Rangers, like, the job isn't done. You got to keep winning because now you got a boost last night. You got a little bit of help from Pittsburgh, of all teams, beating the Carolina Hurricanes. But you got to make sure you fend off the Canes and win that division. And you got the game in hand. You're 3 up on them, but I mean, I was doing the game last night, and Ray was there, and I mean, that third period, I don't think I've seen anything like it in quite some time.
I'll tell you, if you want to see the highlights of this third period, tune into the Cartoon Network.
I didn't check the Cartoon Network this morning, but I don't think Dave Maloney was that far off.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was back and forth. I mean, the fact that they got down 2-0, found a way to, by the way, a couple things. The Trocheck shorthanded goal, that play by Mika was filthy. Getting the puck back to his backhand across the crease, finds Trocheck back post. But then it was kind of just, it was back and forth, pucks behind goalies getting deflected in. Torts looked like just a mess on Philly's bench. But and it's again, Adam Fox in overtime stepping up. It's just, it's interesting. What's interesting about this is just how people feel about the President's Trophy. Like, do you really want the President's Trophy? Like, when you see the history of the teams that have won the President's Trophy?
Yeah.
Do you really want it?
No, I'd much rather have the Vice President's Trophy.
Yeah, listen, so would Aaron Rodgers. Thank God we're not doing that. But this is a really good team, and you're also doing this without... That's the other thing to take into account. You're doing this without two of your best defensemen. And this was without Trouba and without Lindgren, which are two huge pieces of this team.
And you throw in Gustafsson, who didn't play last night.
Right, and they still find a way. And it wasn't pretty. Listen, that third period was not pretty. That's not how you draw it up. But still, find a way to get the 2 points. And you're sitting here right now with the best record in the East.
It really is incredible. And, you know, like we talk about it, you know, on the games with Dave Maloney, you know, our little crosstalk or whatever before the game. Just like with this blue line, as decimated as it's been for the last couple of weeks here. Remember at the trade deadline, there were a lot of Ranger fans. I mean, I took the calls from Ranger fans. They were upset that Chris Drury wasn't more active at the deadline. Maybe go, you know, bigger game hunting, if you will, but instead it was more the depth pieces, you know, the Chad Ruedels of the world on the blue line. And think of how many games it took for Chad Ruedel to even crack this lineup. Well, now you have all these injuries on defense. He's been in there the last few games. I know Zach Jones had the one gaffe last night, but Zach Jones has been playing really well the last handful of games, just stepping up and pitching in. And that's what you need. I mean, you played this game, you know, a long season, it's going to wear on teams. And especially even when you get to the playoffs, I mean, they might have to tap into some of these guys come the postseason too. So the fact that you have so many guys in reserve that you could go to and you feel comfortable with, you got to have confidence if you're a Ranger fan.
Yeah. See, I mean, you're talking about after you get through the 82, trying to make your way through. I mean, it's the most difficult, most physical sport, playoff sport. It's the hardest trophy to win, in my opinion. And to try to get through that, someone's going to get nicked up. Someone's going to get hurt, especially on the defensive side. And you're going to need that kind of depth. Listen, Chris Drury was trying to do what he needed to do to give this team the best opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. They deserve that much. Team's been that good this season. And he answered all the questions. It wasn't the big names. It wasn't the Jake Gensels of the world. But, you know, he found players. I thought Wennberg was a nice fit. Roslovic trying to get that, you know, get that top line going. But when push comes to shove, once you hit the postseason, man, it's, you know, it's the versatility. Like, you see this. You cover the Rangers enough to know, you know, once you get to the playoffs in any professional sport, but especially hockey, what teams are going to try to do to you. I mean, in the seven games, how they decide to play you, to try to, you know, slow down certain things that you do well, you have to have the versatility in your game. You can play fast. Can you play slow? Can you play physical? Can you commit to playing, you know, a boring game if you have to against, you know, a Carolina Hurricanes team, right, to have that kind of, you know, let's just get pucks deep, and once they make a mistake or once they take a penalty, we'll take advantage that way. You got a great goalie, and once you get Trouba back and you get, you know, Lindgren back, you get really good D. And then the other thing, too, is can Panarin find a way to keep this thing going once we hit the postseason?
That's, you know, important.
Right. You know what teams are going to try to do to him. And that's why it was so important this season to try to get Mika and that line going 5-on-5. Because if you're like, I mean, if you're just going to depend on, hey, let's play good D, have our goalie stand on his head, and then take advantage of our power play, that's not going to be a recipe to get you through the playoffs. I mean, you'll win some games like that, but you got to find a way to generate some chances. And you see these games against, you know, physical playoff teams that you're going to go against trying to beat, like, you got to be willing to get in the middle of the ice, get in front of the net, get you know, pucks behind their D, traffic in front of these really good goalies. I'll say this too, as we kind of wrap up the whole hockey talk, because I know you want to get into baseball and everything else.
No, we're going to do hockey for the whole first hour.
I love that.
Yeah.
Is this might be the one. Now, it doesn't have to be the President's Trophy. Right now, I mean, right now you have 100 points, and you're the only team at 100 points. But as far as having the best record in the East this season, I think is important. Because if I'm a Rangers fan, I would rather not see the Lightning in the first round.
I agree with you.
I'd like to avoid them. If I'm a Rangers fan, yeah, much better off playing the Capitals or the Red Wings in that first round. But that's just me. Because, yeah, I mean, it looks like you're going to end up seeing Carolina probably in round two.
Right. No, you're 1,000% right. And for whatever reason, Detroit, I mean, ever since Dylan Larkin got hurt, he's back now. But it just seems like they haven't gotten it back on track yet. They just haven't. And you hope that continues for another 10 games or whatnot going into the playoffs. And if you look at the remaining schedule for the Rangers, half the remaining schedule is against the division. You know, it's Devils, Flyers, Islanders. So that's what you have. You got to go out to Colorado on Thursday. You know, that'll be tricky, of course, because it's Colorado.
And that's one of the teams that have a real chance.
What, the Avalanche?
Yeah, to win.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a chance every year, it seems like, for crying out loud. That's one hell of an organization. You got to go play Detroit next week, because, you know, that game's going to mean a lot for the Wings, so that could be a little bit dicey. But other than that, I mean, the way the schedule kind of sets up, I mean, by the time you get to those last couple of games of the season, you know, when you play the Islanders, like, those games might not mean anything for them if they're out of it.
Right. I mean, and again, this is all about trying to position yourself to have the best chance to make a run. And for me, if I could avoid Tampa in that first round, I would like to do that. Just now, I mean, you're a better team than Tampa, but I mean, Kucherov is one of the best players in the NHL. Vasilevsky, he scares me. Not only because he's my son's favorite goalie, and he lets everyone know that he's my son's favorite goalie, but I mean, they
now, does he do that out of spite or no?
No. Were you here for the story I told?
No, tell the story.
So we're at hockey practice. So mm-hmm. He makes this. So he has his new hockey team.
Yeah,
and they have their first practice, and it's kind of like a get to know each other. We did our parents' meeting, and then we had, you know, the kids sit around and have pizza afterwards so they could kind of get to know each other. So we decided as coaches that, you know, each kid would stand up. Hi, my name is so-and-so. This is the position I play, my favorite team, my favorite player. So, you know, we start at the end of the table. First guy, you know, hi, my name is Dan. I'm a defenseman. My favorite team is the Islanders, and I like, you know, Adam Pellick. Next guy, we have a Rangers fan, another Islanders fan. And then there's my son. All the parents are in the room. Stands up. My name is Milo. I'm a goalie. My favorite team is. And I'm like, oh, no. What's he going to say? I love the Lightning. And my favorite player is Steven Stamkos. I was like, oh, no. Can't believe he just did that. All the parents started laughing. And I could see when he looked at me, he's like, why are they laughing? And then afterwards, I'm like, he's like, Dad, how come everyone was laughing? I was like, well, you heard what you said, right? He's like, yeah. I said, my favorite team was the Lightning. And my favorite player was Stamkos. I was like, well, that's fine that you like the Lightning. I know you like the Lightning.
Lightning!
I mean, he said Stamkos, you're a goalie, didn't? I thought you loved Vasilevsky. He's like, yeah, you know what? I do love Vasilevsky. He's like, I probably could have said you were my favorite player too, couldn't I have? I was like, well, yeah, that would have been, I mean, it would have been a nice thought, but hey, this is your thing. You decide who you like. And all the parents thought it was hilarious that he just, like, I played for the Islanders and yet his favorite team is the Lightning.
Well, how old was he? Like, he's not old enough to remember when you played, is he? Really?
No, he's not old enough to remember when I played. I mean, he's seen me play like just random stuff, but he's been to a couple charity games that I played in, but he never got a chance to see me play for the Islanders. No.
No, not the real thing. So maybe that would have been a little bit different, but no, he's a kid.
Yeah, but I failed. I mean, I do a radio show with you know, a guy who told his kids that if, you know, Cowboys fans would push them down as little kids. I played for the Islanders and he's gone rogue because of my wife and his favorite team is the Lions. It's embarrassing.
That's bad.
That's a bad look for me.
But I don't think you're a failure by any stretch. I think you're too hard on yourself, personally.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
No, it's true.
Dave said I was a failure.
Well, because you're working with him. That's why you're a failure. True. But not when you're working with me, damn it. Doesn't work that way.
See, this is why. You're so supportive.
Doesn't work that way. Well, I have to be now. I have no choice. We're on the same team for the baseball
picks.
Yes,
I knew I was happy I brought you on.
Right? And if you missed that yesterday, Dave or Rick turned me over to the dark side. I'm joining the... Do we have a team name yet or no?
No, I wanted to consult you. I didn't want to just go on my own and make a team name up.
RJ, do we even have team names? Like, is that a... Ray, that's not a thing?
I've not even thought about that, no.
I don't think RJ
has either.
Well, you know, Dave will want to call himself the Giants, and then we'll come up with something much more creative than that.
Can't do that.
I am the Giants.
I'm a Giants guy.
Especially when there's a baseball team called the Giants.
That's right. True.
Right, we got to come up with something nice. This is a big deal. I mean,
what about the Vasilevskys?
No, we don't want to be the Vasilevskys. Good guy, though. He did give my an autograph stick, which is nice.
Do you have any relationship with him? Do you know him?
I do know him.
Yeah?
I do know him a little bit, yeah.
Good guy?
He's a really good guy. He's big, man. These goalies nowadays, dude. I don't even know. Like, when I was out in Vegas doing the shootout stuff, and I got a chance to skate with some of these goalies, too. Like, Ottinger. These guys, they're on a knee next to the post, and they cover the whole net.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Well, because remember, people used to complain, even when you were still playing, that the equipment was too big for the goalies, that it basically covered up the whole damn net. You know, and they wanted everybody to come off of that a little bit because the equipment was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it wasn't fair.
And you know what the answer to that was?
What's that?
We'll make the equipment smaller, but we'll make the goalies will be bigger.
Right.
So the size of the equipment really doesn't matter because the goalies are humongous.
The goalies are basically gone the way of, and I think they have. You know, like, you know, back in the day, you think of goalies like, you know, Chico Resch, Darren Pang, guys who were, you know, like 5'1". And now they've just, like you said, they're gargantuan. It's almost like the place kicker in football. Remember, when we like back in the day, kickers were, you know, that big. And they were essentially like glorified soccer players. And now, you know, these dudes are jacked. Booting 60, 70-yard kicks.
Well, yeah, now they're weapons. But they're also, I mean, everyone's in shape now. Like, no one's come. Like, you see these guys, that's part of the reason that people complain all the time. Why are guys always hurt? Because they train all year round. They're always
in
shape.
Some of them do.
Well, a lot of them. I mean, the good ones do.
I'll tell you, and we got to get into that, and we will a little bit later on in the show here, because, you know, the league wrapping up its annual meetings down there in Florida, and a lot came out of it, and we talked about the Jets and the Giants angles and what the powers that be said regarding those teams, and we'll do a little bit more on the Giants, too, because I think we left some things unturned a little about their future plans. But in particular, the other big story to come out of Florida were those rule changes for the upcoming season. They're banning the hip drop tackle. The kickoff rule is now changing, which you and I think are in agreement on the kickoff rule thing. Like, if it's going to increase the number of returns, that's great because it's an exciting part of the game. But you and I were even saying before that with this hip drop rule that they're banning, can't you see, And I'm just bracing all the football fans now. When we get to the season, you know there's going to come a game where team you're rooting for is on defense. It's fourth down. You need a stop to get off the field with, like, you know, inside of 2 minutes left. You make the big play. You make the tackle. You're celebrating. You're high-fiving your buddies. You think you won the game. And all of a sudden, that yellow flag is going to come flying out of the referee's hands because apparently it was a hip drop tackle. And it's not going to be reviewable. And it's going to give the offense a new lease on life. And I guarantee you they're going to go down the field and win the game. And a team is going to lose because of a bad hip drop tackle call. It's bound to happen.
Well, especially early in the season. Right? I mean, this is what happens early in the season. We were talking about this with the baseball stuff, with the, you know, the play, you know, the play when you're second base on a stole, on a steal, where, I mean, we had the Lindor play last week where it's, I mean, this is going to be a point of emphasis. You're not going to like it, but the officials have been told, we're going to try to change the behavior of the players and get this out of the sport, so we're going to make sure we're calling, you know, we're calling every single one of these, even one, you know, even the close ones. What I didn't like about it is I was actually watching some of the plays that they showed to the owners and the people that were, you know, the competition.
Like a demonstration thing, yeah.
Right, like they'll give you the examples. Like we had that all the time. Like the referees will come in and show you what they're going to call. And a couple of them were like, wow, they're going to really call that? You see some of the ones, you're like, well, that's clearly, we're trying to get that out of the game. What I thought was interesting yesterday was Brandon Bean did an interview on McAfee, and they, I guess during the meeting when they were talking about this, said that there are some, it's believed that there are some teams that are coaching their players to tackle like this. And they want to make sure that's not, that doesn't continue. And then he was like, well, did they say which teams? Like, no, I have a hard time believing that there's teams actually teaching players to tackle like this, but it was said that there were a couple teams that are teaching their players to tackle like this, and we want to eliminate that from the sport. But they don't want the, they don't want that. You know, Brandon Bean was talking about it too. He's like, he does, it's hard enough to play defense as it is.
There you go.
Right? And I mean, with all the other rules.
That's the bottom line.
Now you add this, and on top of that, this is not what people want to see. Flags all over the field. They're already doing that, where you, like, something happens, you're just waiting to see the pop-up on the screen flag. Right, like you're holding your breath. Okay, is this going to stand? And then it just slows the game down, and that's not really what, you know, people are interested in watching.
We've been saying this for the last several years. It's almost damn near impossible to be a defensive player and to play defense now in the NFL, and a rule like this just makes it even harder. It makes it even harder. I mean, you watch games now, Rick, and you see guys, I see guys, defenders, that almost look like they're afraid to initiate contact with ball carriers because it's almost like they don't want to get called for a penalty. It's like they're. It's almost like they're afraid to bring these guys down to the ground because God forbid that they get a flag thrown their way.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, that's, and again, I think their thought process is they're trying to keep guys healthy, which is, that's the NFL.
Right,
big
and I
thing.
Get that.
Player safety,
I totally get.
Which
it.
I have a hard time believing anyway, but they like to pretend like they're trying to keep the players safe and healthy. But I think the other thing though is they think that they're such good athletes that they'll be able to adapt to the new rules. But when you're right, when you watch some of these, you know, you watch some of these plays happen, you're like, I mean, I don't even know how, as good an athlete as you are, when you're full speed the way these guys are going, like how you can avoid some of these hits that you're getting penalties for anyway.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
I think they're listening to me.
They're everywhere, Dave.
I know you're here.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want.
Woohoo! Over here!
Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
The day before opening day, Major League Baseball, still remains to be seen whether or not the Mets are going to be able to give it a go tomorrow. Now they're talking about this window, Rick, the proverbial window with the weather, that there might be a chance to get this game in at some point. But I don't know. Opening day, special, the home opener. I think if you're going to inconvenience the fans and everything and you're going to have to like push it back for an undetermined amount of time, just move it to Friday. Like, call it early. Don't make people schlep out there and then not have it go down.
Well, yeah, I'm with you. But I mean, what about those people that decided they were going to take off, you know, off work on Thursday?
Take off work Friday.
Why? Just a quick pivot?
Quick pivot.
See if they announce it now. Listen, we're going to move opening day for the Mets.
Say you're
Friday.
Not feeling well. Nah, I can't go. I got to go.
Listen, boss, I was going to take Thursday off. Yeah. How about I work Thursday and give me Friday off?
Well, it's a holiday weekend, too, right? It's Easter weekend.
How about we do that? That'd be nice.
So you're going to observe, you're going to do all that stuff, and then you go to the ballpark.
Hey, listen, not a terrible idea, but I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, that would be, that's, you want people to really have the opportunity to enjoy opening day.
You know what's funny? Yesterday, did you see the Yankees? And every team does this, but the Yankees yesterday had their big day, where they invite the media and they displayed all the new food items that are going to be on the menu this year at Yankee Stadium.
I did see that.
And it's like a free taste testing. So you have like the hordes of media show up to the ballpark essentially for a free lunch. That's what it is, right? You get to sit there and hobnob, and you get to pick and choose and eat whatever you want and not have to pay a dime. It's fantastic. It's like it's the greatest thing probably on the media calendar that you can do. And it's funny, the same cast of characters always show up to each and every one of these because, you know what? If it's free food, I'm there. And, of course, some of these media people, we get bad reputations as it is.
The media love free food.
That right. was food actually, plus that was, free.
That was one of our biggest pet peeves we would take so the media would fly with us.
Yeah.
So it would take us longer to get to the team plane after the games because, you know, we just played. You got to do, you know, all your stuff, your treatment. You got to shower, you get, you know, whatever. It takes you longer to get there. So by the time we would get to the plane, we would be the last ones on the plane. And, of course, media there first, all the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches gone. Like, they would just, they would raid all the food before we even got on the plane.
They were they had access to those sandwiches?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and who doesn't love them? I mean, come on.
That's
delicious
wild.
Peanut butter and jelly?
That's wild for a multitude of reasons.
What? Ray, right?
I know the media doesn't really fly with the teams anymore, but like the fact that they had access to the food for the players.
Well, I'll tell you,
if
you were still playing with the Islanders now, the media ain't flying with them. Lou doesn't allow that. Lou doesn't allow the media on the plane.
No, he does not.
That's insanity.
Because they took all the sandwiches.
Who needs the peanut butter sandwiches more? The players or the
Dude,
media?
Dude, they would smash all the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
When you say media, you mean like the ones that, like the television crew, the radio crew, or like the writers even that cover the team?
No, like the radio, TV.
Like for the team, not just people.
For the team.
Okay, that's what I meant.
Yeah, but still, you'd come in and all you'd want after the game, because you get meals still, but you know, it'd be nice, peanut butter and jelly.
Listen, it's not a thing for us because I don't travel. But if I would, I'd have had the decency, even if I was allowed, to not eat the players' food.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
What did you do? It's like, oh, well, you know, I played the game 60 minutes, all that equipment on, I'm tired, lost a lot of calories. What'd you do? I wrote 5,000 words. Ha-ha.
You know how tired my fingers are right now?
Yeah. From typing the whole night long? Now, did you ever come up to one of them and be like, you know, I think, you know, we put in more work tonight. I'm a little bit hungrier than you are. And it strikes me as odd that you would go and eat all the sandwiches when we, the players, have nothing.
Well, we had, don't get me wrong, we still had something. Like, we would still get meals after, like, they would bring out meals eventually, like hot meals. But everyone, for some reason, we all liked the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And there were no peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I don't remember. Maybe I might have, but I don't think I did. But some of the older guys were like, they would say to the flight attendants, like, hey, can we make sure that there's peanut butter and jelly sandwiches left for the players when we get on the plane?
And what do they say?
Really, like, eventually they figured it out, but still, early on, peanut butter and jelly, couldn't find them.
Well, when I covered hockey and I was in those rooms like immediately after the game, it didn't matter. The go-to was always pizza, right? It seemed like everybody had pizza.
Yeah, early was my first couple years was always pizza.
It was, and that's, I think that's probably the last time I was in a dressing room for hockey. It was like your first couple of years. But it was always pizza. You go on the road team, boom, there'd be like stacks of pizza there. And that's what they'd be sitting there at their stalls, scarfing up some slices. But then you get on the plane and then you got even more. A little bit of a different variety.
Yeah, you'd have a nice meal on the plane. All that changed though, man. Like, first of all, we didn't get snacks. We had no direct deposit. We had no snacks. We had to buy our own snacks. And then eventually we end up getting snacks and everything else. But that whole, the pizza.
What, like gummy bears and stuff?
No, like a pregame snack. Like, guys, like, there would be other teams that had, like, at the hotel, you'd have something set up where it was a pregame snack where you got to the rink and they had, you know, a room. Because a lot of these teams have meals at the facility now.
Yeah.
But they'd have a room. Like, you know, Sidney Crosby would eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before every game. They'd have, you know, bagel, whatever it was, oatmeal. We had none of that stuff.
I wouldn't eat oatmeal before a game. That ain't gonna sit well. Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
You never had any issues?
Well, not right before the game. Like, so you wake up from your nap, and before you caught the team bus, you'd have, I don't know, like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You have a nice bowl of oatmeal.
Maybe. Oatmeal for lunch? Or like late lunch?
No, not a late lunch. You already had a humongous meal.
What the hell are you eating oatmeal for? That's almost like dinner time for some people. Oatmeal?
Well, dinner time for us is going to be 11. What? This was a meal to carb up before you had to actually play in the game.
Ray, if you're playing hockey, you eating oatmeal like 2 hours before puck drop?
That's really pushing it.
Yeah,
I
don't think oatmeal.
You guys have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, no,
I know what I'm talking about.
It could be toast. It could be a bagel.
You've got to have energy. You need some carbs. I get it.
Oatmeal is slop.
Oatmeal's delicious.
It's just not that good.
If oatmeal's done right.
If oatmeal's done right. I mean, listen, just because you don't know how to make oatmeal, don't disparage oatmeal. So you'd have your pregame snack, you play, maybe you'd sprinkle in a protein bar in between periods, whatever you wanted to do, and then by the time you ate dinner, it was probably 11 o'clock.
Have you seen what these poor guys look like at the ends of these games, man?
Oh, they look ravaged.
Like, look at the guys after the... a picture of these guys after they get through a playoff run, what they look like.
That's frowned down upon. That's invading their privacy.
Grotesque.
And access. Yeah.
Gross beards, all pale. Probably a little bit doughier than they were when they started the season.
You know, it's from the oatmeal.
It's unbelievable.
You got to stay away from the oatmeal.
Mentally just drained. I got a question, too, at some point I want to ask you about this whole Shohei Ohtani thing.
Why don't you just ask me now? I mean, what are we doing?
Well, I don't want to go all over the place. Well, because we were talking NFL rules. I had the NFL rules all ready to go. Now you pivoted to baseball.
Well, I mean, you got the NFL rules all ready to go. You can get the NFL rules up anytime you want. But we're talking baseball.
I know. We got other important rules.
How about the fact that I broke a story yesterday, didn't get credit for it, which we'll get to a little bit later.
Well, we know because you have to add that to the group chat.
That's right.
Great job, Dan.
Well, thanks for my guys for sticking up for me, too. Especially you.
Well, I don't know if I had to stick up for you. You broke the news. I mean, you said it before it was announced by Schefter, or Schefter reported it.
We'll get to it later. Anyway, go ahead. What's your Ohtani thing?
We got Christmas football. I'm sure the NBA's pumped. Here's the question for the entire show. Not just you. I want Raymond and RJ's opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
Why would Ipe agree to do the 90-minute sit-down if he was guilty of stealing $4.5 million?
Well, how about did you see the latest thing from that Tisha Thompson, who wrote the article for ESPN and who had the sit-down with Ipe, that she wanted now to find out from Ohtani's people if they've gone ahead and filed the charges for theft. No comment.
Well, he wasn't answering questions. Yeah, I mean, they did. But I'm asking you a serious question.
No, like, this is like for yesterday. Like, no comment. So they still won't even cop to that yet. So why are there, like, so many different sides of this story? When Ohtani's spoken and you hear his side, but yet his people won't even go along with what Ohtani said when he made it as if there was theft involved.
Well, yeah, or the other thing that doesn't add up is how is it that when Ipe addressed the team was the first time that Ohtani really realized what was going on?
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, but why would you agree to do a 90-minute sit-down if you had stolen $4.5 million? You weren't going to get caught? They were going to be like, oh, that's a pretty good story. I'm just going to, yeah, Nate, good job. You stole the money, no problem, we'll move forward.
Well, as I said yesterday, too, like, why would you agree? You agreed to the sit-down, you did the interview, Ohtani's people set that whole thing up, and yet they never let Ohtani know that this interview was happening? Wasn't Ohtani with Ipe in Korea when this all went down? But yet Ohtani was the only one that was in the dark of this whole thing. It's like they keep him in the basement and don't let him up until it's time for batting practice. So he has no idea what's happening in the world.
Right, sit-down was on Tuesday. Game was on Wednesday, correct?
Right.
Right, and they have video of him in the dugout with Ipe.
Correct.
Right, everything seemed fine.
There's a lot going on here.
I could imagine if I stole $4.5 million that I would sit down for 90 minutes with ESPN and come up with some fakakta story, hoping that everyone would be on board with it.
Now you're beating your oatmeal instead. Yankees, let's get to the calls. Ben in East Windsor, up first here on 98.7 ESPN. Benjamin, good morning, how are you?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, Ben.
Hey Donnie, leave Rick alone about the oatmeal. Oatmeal's good.
Yeah, but are you eating that before you got to play a hockey game, like a couple of hours before?
It's 3 hours before the game.
It's a lot of protein, man. Protein.
Yeah, but there's a lot of other things that protein, too. You know what? When you have an accident on the ice, don't say I didn't warn you. That's all I'm saying.
I got you.
Is oatmeal a diuretic?
It could be whatever the hell you want it to be, but I wouldn't eat it before a game. I mean something dry, all right?
So my concern is with Gerrit Cole's injury. I just feel like they're taking too long here. Like everybody keeps saying he's okay, there's no tear. So say he misses 5-6 starts, then he comes out, you know, has a start. They got him on a pitch limit or an innings limit, and then next thing you know, he's got the fatigue again, and then he goes down in August. Then we don't have him for the playoffs. Then he's going to Tommy John.
That's the worst case scenario. What you just found out is the worst case scenario.
Worst case.
Yeah, I mean, it's aiming in that direction. It feels that way to me, like, you know, outside looking in. And then my other concerns, there's two other concerns for the Yankees. Cabrera at third base makes me a little nervous. And then, you know, the walking glass house in Giancarlo Stanton. So, but that's it. Those are my concerns going into the season. I still think they're a good team offensively. The pitching scares me a lot. And the two other glaring things in my eyes is Cabrera playing third base and Stanton, who's leaner, but, you know, he can.
Yeah, but they're not as reliant on Stanton this year, or they shouldn't be.
No, that's one plus I think we have. But, you know, with LeMahieu going into the season already on the IL, we're losing a bat there. You know, you still want Stanton's bat if you can. I mean, Soto's incredible. We get him for a year. Hopefully, Hal decides to open the checkbook for him, but I just can't see it happening because he hasn't done it yet. And, but yeah, that's my concern going into the season. I still think they're probably a 90-win team, but we're not in the same league as Baltimore or Tampa Bay. I mean, that's coming from a diehard Yankee fan.
You know what it is, Ben, and I thank you for the phone call, my friend. I think last year, if you're a Yankee fan, you faced your baseball mortality head on. You think that's fair?
Yeah, I guess.
No, because what I mean is you go into this season, and it was never like this, because the Yankees for so long, you know, they had the rich payroll. They had the talent. Now, though, you go into this season, and it's a little bit of an older group. It seems like and I bring it up again, it's almost like the Jets. Like, we're going to go into this Jets season, and you're relying on so many guys that have to stay healthy. You know, Aaron Rodgers, Tyron Smith, guys like, you know, big players on your team, they have to stay healthy. Same thing with the Yankees, right? Like, if these guys go down, you might be looking at a situation again like last year. And the situation that Ben just brought up with Gerrit Cole, you should be scared. And none of us are doctors, but we have followed baseball long enough, Rick, to where we've seen a lot of these pitchers where they come down with an original issue with their arm, their elbow, whatever. And initially, surgery isn't recommended. There's no tear. They feel okay. They're going to try to rehab it and blah, 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 only to find out months down the line that they do have to go under the knife. And if that happens with Gerrit Cole, as you said, you could kiss this year goodbye, and then you could kiss next year goodbye. And where does that leave the Yankees?
Well, here's the problem, though, with that. And we had some sound from Buster Olney last
Buster Olney basically thinks he's going to have his arm amputated, yeah.
Well, yeah, for everyone he's talked to that's been through this says, yeah, there's no tear now. There's no Tommy John now, but this is, like you just said, this is headed down. At some point, he's going to need Tommy John from a guy that is a workhorse that doesn't ever miss a start. Like, that's the beauty of Gerrit Cole, is every fifth day he shows up and he's the best pitcher in baseball or one of the best pitchers in baseball. Like, he's going to miss more than six starts this season. I don't know what you do, though. There's no tear. So there's nothing they can do, right? I mean, they put him on this rehab program. Hopefully the irritation calms down. He'll come back and he's fine. But it's not like they're going to be like, hey, you know, there's a real chance at some point this is gonna you know, tear so we can fix it. Now, they can't do anything.
No. No,
so
you just got to let it play out.
Cross your fingers and hope that this, you know, the rehab strengthening, everything goes well. And he doesn't end up needing Tommy John. But if he comes back and they have to shut him down again and then he needs Tommy John and misses this season and next season, that's devastating.
You know what might be a good omen for the Yankees? You got two guys in their lineup with the initials AV, everyday players.
Okay.
What are the chances of that happening? Alex Verdugo, Anthony Volpe.
What are the chances of that happening? Probably not very good.
There you go. So I think the Yankees are going to win a championship this year just because of that. DJ LeMahieu, you got to hope he gets back into the lineup at some point. Aaron Boone said he's going to get another MRI, but here he is on the Talkin' Yanks pod about the latest with DJ.
As DJ started to do a little more baseball things, like, it still hasn't responded great this week. Like, the first several days after, you know, I noticed, like, just his gait walking in, it was improving. But then as he started to really move around, I know, even go out and take some ground balls, it's just not even where it needs to be. That's why we made the decision to just go ahead and IL him. And he knew that. So he's staying back in Tampa to continue to work, and we'll have to see. Again, it's not something that we're going to rush. And I think DJ's very much on board with all that he's dealt with from a foot standpoint here these last couple of years.
It's funny because your gait this morning, I noticed, was exemplary when you came walking in.
Which is surprising because my right wheel is just...
It's done?
A mess, yeah. Yeah, the right
can't be repaired, just, not fixed?
Well, I can get fixed. It's just I'm too lazy to go fix it. And it's just... It's not
well, you're
great.
Fooling people, though. It's working for you, though. So you should be commended about that. Let's say hi to Mark. He is in Monmouth. That is in New Jersey. And I got to get the mouse working. Hello, Mark. Good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You What's
know,
up, Mark?
We had the guy like one or two callers ago, and I'm a Yankee fan. We called Giancarlo Stanton a walking glass house. So should we call Aaron Judge Casper the Friendly Ghost? Because when big spots come, why don't you go look at his numbers? All right? How about
the
series in mid to late? How about the stats in mid to late July last year when the Yankees were on a little run for the deadline when they went to Tampa? He went 0 for 13 with 9 strikeouts.
Well, he was coming back from that foot injury, though.
Yeah, you know, that's really great. I mean, he gets paid $30-something million. I mean, this guy gets every every excuse in the book. And I don't understand, because he's had two healthy seasons in his whole career. So, I mean, who says he's already had an oblique, a side
injury great seasons, though.
In spring training?
Mark, they were great seasons.
You're paying for the highs, Mark. That's what it is.
You pay for the highs, but you also have to be available. So are you getting Aaron Judge this year? Like, do you think Aaron Judge is playing 150 games this year? What do you think?
No, definitely not. Especially this day and age, that, you know, with load management so pervasive as it is in sports, Yankees are going to operate with kid gloves with Judge, because they realize the best chance they have of winning is when you have Judge out there more often than not.
Well, you saw that last year, what this offense looked like without Aaron Judge. I think right now he gets the benefit of the doubt, because these aren't like soft tissue injuries. It's not like, hey, we can't let this guy run from first to second hard because he's going to pull a hamstring. It's he goes crashing into a wall and there's a cement block he smashes his foot into, or it's he dives for a ball and ends up cracking a rib. But at a certain point, you're just the guy who gets injured a lot. Doesn't matter what kind of injury it is, right? Soft tissue, it could be whatever it is. Just he gets hurt a lot, and they're going to try to manage him through this season. A lot of these really good teams, though, they got guys that play every day, man.
Yeah, it's a rarity. You know, it's kind of throwback, and you'd like to see it, but it's not going to be the case with the Yankees. You're talking about a guy who's, you know, I don't want to say he's injury-prone, but somebody that you have to keep tabs on if you want to get the best baseball out of him for the length of the contract, and it is indeed a lengthy one. Hey, the DNR pregame party is back. Show is heading out to Publicans again in Manhasset on Long Island on Thursday, May 2nd, then riding the LIRR to Citi Field for the second annual pregame party ahead of Mets-Cubs before going into the game at 1:10 p.m. and sitting in Section 129. That's Thursday, May 2nd at Publicans in Manhasset, then right to Citi Field. We will see you there. More of your baseball conversation. We'll get into the NFL rules as well. Plus, we got Stump Gross and Company, DNR 98.7 ESPN. And now word from True Green. Are you ready to elevate your lawn game without breaking the bank? Well, True Green has been the trusted choice for over 2 million homeowners for over 50 years. Visit TrueGreen.com today and discover the easiest and affordable way to achieve a pro-level lawn, guaranteed. Plus, enjoy True Green's verified price matching, ensuring you get the best lawn for the best price. Visit TrueGreen.com and transform your lawn effortlessly. That's TrueGreen.com. Your dream lawn is just around the corner.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast. Looking for more access to the show?
Why? Because you know why.
Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DR on ESPN.
The new kickoff rule change, Rick, which is going to increase some action when it comes to actually having kickoff returns and bringing that back into the game. It's what you saw in the XFL, essentially, to where they don't want anybody to get a running start. The kicker's going to run up and kick the football. Nobody's going to be allowed to move at all except the player who's receiving the kick. And then once he is in possession of it, then everybody can dart down the field and try to tackle him. It's going to get a little challenging for coaches, because special teams coaches have done things a certain way for however long that they've been doing it, you know, strategy and the X's and O's. Now they're going to have to adapt to the times, because what you once coached and what you once did, you can't do anymore by the way the rules are.
Right. But I mean, that's again, I mean, this is something that I was listening to a bunch of people talking about this, and the prevailing thought was, and I'm going to say this the right way, because last time I said it, John Winthrop attacked me because he wanted to bring into, you know, the amount of time, and because on a fair catch or a touchback, time doesn't come off the clock, so you're also getting, you know, another offensive play. But the thought process behind this was, last season with touchbacks, fair catches, you lost 2,000, just over 2,000 actual plays. So it was just the kick, and there was no...
Isn't that amazing? 2,000.
2,000. Now, initially when the rule was brought up to ownership, it was the penalty for kicking the ball directly into the end zone was going to be ball goes out to the 35. And again, let's just remember, this is just 1 year, right? This is, we're going to test this for 1 year. So they decided that that was too penal, that they wanted to make it the 30, so there was still the opportunity for teams to kick the ball into the end zone if they felt like strategically that was the best, their best option to avoid a big kick return. But I mean, their thought is that they're going to get, they think this will limit it a little bit, but they're still going to get around 60-65% of those 2,000 plays will actually result in actual activity, a return. Which is good, because that's an exciting play. I mean, that's something that you want in the game. And if this is going to give you the opportunity to have that and limit the risk to the players, then I'm excited to see it. And there's also some, like, if you watch any of the XFL games, there are some things, and I'm sure they're all thinking about ways to, I mean, that's kind of what their job is to do, is to, whatever competitive edge you saw the Patriots do, where they were, you know, trying to kick it to a certain spot, is, if you watch some of the XFL, there's some, like, the reverse stuff you've seen on these plays. Like, there's still some, like, fun, exciting things they can do with this new rule. But, dude, I mean, it's a play that I like, and I'm happy that they're finally trying to, you know, not kill it. Because that's where it felt like it was headed. It was just going to be done.
Well, I mean, you could sit there also, and look, the coaches are going to be creative about it. They should, right? And I think it's going to be fun for fans, but you know what's also going to happen? You're going to have a lot of coaches that'll be, and teams that'll scream bloody murder about, remember the Ravens with the Patriots and the stuff that New England was, you know, pulling on them in the playoffs, and
eligible,
how,
you know, ineligible, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, really stretching the rule book to the last syllable, basically. That's going to happen all over again. And everybody's going to try to look to have a strategic edge. Now, the onside kick is something that's pretty much obsolete in football anyways, and now it's going to be damn near almost impossible.
Because you got to announce it, yeah.
Right, you got to announce it. So that's one, and those are exciting. But it just gives you, if you are behind, it's going to make it even that much more challenging to come back and pull off one of those miracle wins, like the Jets had in Cleveland a couple of years ago.
Right, it'll also benefit the teams that have a kicker that can try to, I mean, I guess the best way to do this, if you're the kicking team, would be try to kind of, I guess, line something into the landing area and get the ball bouncing and hope that it goes into, I mean, if it's, as long as it's landing in the area, not into the end zone, and the ball rolls into the end, the ball's still live too. Right? So, I mean, I guess that would give you an advantage on the kicking side of this thing. But, I mean, this wasn't the only good rule, I think. I mean, I like this rule. The hip drop tackle rule, I mean, and how it's explained too. Like, did you read the explanation for the actual rule?
For the hip drop rule?
The hip drop rule?
No.
All right. So it's a penalty if player grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms and, here's the best part, unweights himself. It's called unweighting. Mm-hmm. So if you unweight yourself by swiveling and dropping your hips or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs or below the knee.
So basically you have to be the Matrix.
Yeah, don't unweight yourself.
And contort your body in midair while you're making this move. And we already see the inconsistencies when it comes to roughing the passer with this rule, right? Like, they say you went too high. Well, no, I launched and went to go make a tackle. It's not my fault that the quarterback then moved his body, which is completely out of my control, and then I get called for a penalty. This is going to be, look, and I know why they did it. We all know why they did it. But this is going to create so much drama and so much headache. Once the season starts, brace yourself is all I'm saying. Brace yourself.
Well, I think especially early, this is going to be a point of emphasis. And whenever it's a point of emphasis, you're going to get, if it's questionable for the officials, it's going to be called.
Well, the hell with early, Rick. I mean, like, if it costs you a game because it's a bogus call, and it's all a judgment call, you know, because in real time, these officials are going to have to sit there and figure out if it was a hip drop tackle or not. That's very difficult to legislate. If there's a game in November, whatever, that costs you a game, and that might be the one game that you missed the playoffs because of, watch out.
No, I understand what you're saying. And I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm just saying, especially early, with rules like this, especially early when they're trying to enforce it, the officials are being told that if it's, if you think it might be a hip drop tech, call the penalty. Like, it's going to be that, they're going to lean towards calling the penalty.
When in doubt, throw the flag.
Right. Because that's what they want, because they're trying to curb the behavior. That's what they do. That's what the officials used to tell us. Like, fellas, just so you know, preseason and early on in the season, if it looks like it could be a penalty, it's going to be a penalty. Because we want to incentivize you guys not to do this anymore.
Now, the kickoff rule is a one-year kind of trial run, right? Because they're going to reevaluate it in 25. Not with the hip drop, though.
No, hip drop's out.
That's gone. That's a thing.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's law.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be, I mean, some of these that I watched that they showed the...
A lot of defensive players hate it, obviously.
Right, and like I said, like there was some thought that their team's coaching players to tackle this way, which, I mean, I guess if they're saying it, I mean, I'll take their word for it, but some of the ones that they showed the examples, you're like, oh, man, if you're going to start calling that, it's almost like now this was kind of the players adapting to no longer being able to horse collar. Because once the guy gets by you, how are you getting, you know what I mean? Like, it was, okay, I grabbed the back of his shoulder pads, I can pull him down. Now it's, I grab the back of him, and how else, without dropping my weight, am I going to tackle him? I'm just going to hold on and let him drag me?
Right.
Or do I go dead body, and then, you know, the force of my weight brings him down? I just going to, dude, it's, playing defense in this league, man,
it stinks.
It stinks.
It really does. Let's say hi to Ira. He's in Staten Island. He's next on 98.7. Hi, Ira. How are you?
Hey, all good. And, boy, I tell you, I love the kickoff change rule. I really do, because the way it was, it was pretty much, you didn't even have to watch. The ball's going out of the back of the end zone. And now you're going to see the better coaching staffs, okay, especially special teams coaches, they're going to use it to their advantage. And, you know, I don't know how the rules are going to play out. Maybe you guys know. But if I get this correct, you have 9 men up front, and then you have 2 guys back if you want.
Yep.
Are they going to be able to call plays where if you have your 2 outside guys, left or right, are you going to start able to do, like, reverses?
Yep.
Because pretty much it's like a run. Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. Because I think this is going to be a lot of fun, and I think it's going to add something to the game.
Yeah, I think the double team blocking down the field is something that they were trying to eliminate. So, like, if there's two, so the two
well,
guys
they already got rid of the wedge, right?
Right. So the 2 guys that are back to receive, the guy that doesn't catch the ball cannot engage a player, I think, that's already being blocked.
Right.
I think that's something that they're trying to eliminate.
You can't do the double
all
team.
All offensive plays, like, let's say the guy catches a ball, if he wants to throw a lateral to the other side, that's all in play.
Yep.
Absolutely.
All right, Google it. There's some cool XFL plays that they showed with some reverse stuff.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It should be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, Ira, look, it's exciting, and it brings a part of the game, which is potentially a game changer. I mean, kickoff, you know, special teams plays like that, those could change the flow of games. And to bring more of that back in, I don't know anybody that would complain over that.
Jobs, too. So the players
right.
like it.
Absolutely.
Right? You saw what the Steelers did the second this rule passes.
Cordarrelle Patterson.
Immediately.
They'll find ways to use him for sure.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
I think they're listening to me.
They're everywhere, Dave.
I know you're here.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want.
Woohoo! Over here!
Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Brian Daboll holding court yesterday. Here he was evaluating the quarterback prospects in this upcoming draft.
You're watching everything and seeing how, you know, they respond, how they respond in two-minute situations, how they respond after an interception, what's the play look like, you know, after a few bad plays or a few incompletions. There's no exact science in it. It's obvious that there isn't. You do the best job you can. You know, I love doing it. I love evaluating the quarterbacks. I love meeting with the quarterbacks. It's an awesome position to work with, and it's a really fun position to evaluate.
So it's a whole lot of nothing that he's going to tell you, you know, in regards to one or the other, or even if maybe they're thinking about possibly diving into those waters. But I think what Joe Shane said and what John Mara said, right now, what do we say? No better than 50-50? They're taking a quarterback come April.
Yeah, it just depends where. Right? It depends where. I mean, you see some of these new mocks and some of the activity. We'll talk about it, you know, I think later in the show. It's you may not have the ability to do it. Or be willing to give up what it's going to take to go up and get a guy that you might like. Right? I mean, a lot of these drafts have quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, 4. And are you going to be willing to give whatever it's, I mean, are you going to be able to match what Minnesota is going to offer to get up there? Or what Denver could potentially offer to get up there? Or is this all part of just like the whole, you know, positioning yourself for everyone to believe that you want a quarterback and, you know, getting a wide receiver that you might like?
Today, by the way, is the pro day over at LSU. So you're going to see Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers. They're going to be in action. Drake May has his tomorrow at North Carolina. And nobody has a bad pro day, as we know. But, you know, you're going to hear all the reports and how many representatives the Giants had at the LSU pro day and this team, whether they were accounted for. I mean, that's, you know, par for the course this time of year. But when you look at this team and what they should do, and you and I have talked about it the last couple of days, Daniel Jones, the clock is ticking, right? And we know that there's going to be no more sand left in that hourglass at the end of the season as far as him being a New York Giant. It's done. Question is, how productive is he going to be this year and how much opportunity is he going to have this season to kind of leave one lasting imprint as the quarterback of the football Giants? And I guess a lot of it is going to be determined by what happens in April.
Well, I also think it's, I mean, he's going to be in control of this. I mean, when he came back from the initial neck injury last season, you know, Dave and I talked about this. I think there was 9 games left in the season. And I said to Dave, this might be the most important 9 games of Daniel Jones' career as a Giant. Because he has the ability to win enough games where they don't have the opportunity to draft the quarterback. Prove to them that he can play. And also don't give them the chance to get up high enough in a draft where they could consider taking a quarterback or consider taking your replacement. And unfortunately for him, he ends up blowing out his ACL. It's just you're in a spot now where Dable and Shane are going into year 3. They didn't draft Daniel Jones. He's not available enough. And on top of that, can you justify paying him the amount of money that you're paying him right now for the level of production and the amount of wins that you're getting? And I think the answer to that question is no. Right? And I'll say this too about that, just that, you know, quickly on the sound we heard from Brian Dable. Skill, you know, arm talent, all that stuff is important. But I would also say with Brian Dable, the way he likes to coach and some of the stuff you saw with Daniel Jones, go back to week 1. Right in his first year, when Daniel Jones throws that interception into the end zone and he reamed him out on the sideline and we loved it. Or last year when he threw the tablet at him. Like, the kid's going to have to be made of the right stuff because Brian Dable's going to coach him hard.
Right. Here's a question I have for Giant fans. If you draft a quarterback in the first round this year, but Daniel Jones is going to start the season as your QB, would you be willing to go through another 2004 all over again? Meaning, you might even be hanging around. You could be a 500 team, let's say 7-8 weeks into the season. You may be in the wild card hunt all year. You may not be. Who knows? But would you be willing to go through another experiment like they did 20 years ago, where they sent Kurt Warner to the bench, Eli came on, got valuable experience, but you didn't win a lot of games the rest of that season? Would you be willing to do the same thing again, given that there may not even be any assurances that it's going to lead to 2 Super Bowl wins like you got with Eli into the future? But what we do know is that that guy is going to take over the reins next year and Daniel Jones is going to be gone. But are you willing to punt on this season, which might show you a little bit of promise, all to get this rookie some valuable experience?
Well, first of all, you'll give us the nugget here with the numbers in Vegas and everything else.
Right.
There aren't high expectations for the Giants anyway.
But there weren't 2 years ago either.
I understand that. Everything kind of just, I mean, every close game went their way. They find ways to win.
All right, how about that? Let me rephrase it that way. What happens if you're having a season as a Giant fan, like you had 2 seasons ago? You're playing above expectations, and it might even end up where you make the playoffs, win a playoff game. But you're not going to be able to have that happen if you pull the plug on Daniel Jones midway through the season in favor of the rookie. Would you be willing to punt with that, not knowing what the future is going to lie in store with this rookie quarterback, but to give him the reps?
If Brian Daboll told me that this was the best way to develop whatever quarterback right. they drafted in the first round, then you'd have to believe him because he has a track record of being pretty good at it. But
and you're giving up a playoff spot.
Right, but I don't think you have to do that, though. There's nothing in the manual that says the kid has to play in year one. And you have to punt on the season. If Daniel Jones is playing well and you're winning football games, I see no problem with the kids sitting back and just learning. And then even getting a taste of like everything that goes into preparing for a playoff game and what the atmosphere is like. I know it's not playing in the actual playoff game, but to get that experience, I think, would probably benefit him. And I also think sometimes you run the risk where there aren't many guys, if any, in the NFL especially, that have any interest in punting on a season. If the quarterback is playing well and you're winning football games and you have a real chance to make the playoffs, who wants to give up that opportunity? So this young kid, and guess what? I may not even be here to reap the benefits of having the young kid as my quarterback. Right? Like, how does that land in the locker room?
Well, but remember also what we talked about the other day. Quarterback equals job security, potentially.
It does, and I think that's that has to be at least in the back of their minds that it's going to buy them more time. I just think, I don't necessarily feel like there needs to be a rush to have these young kids go play immediately, because not every single one of them is ready.
I agree with you, but that's not the culture in the NFL right now, unfortunately.
Well, maybe it needs to change when you see what happens in Green Bay, when you see what happens in Kansas City. Right, Kansas City didn't punt in the playoffs. So last game of the season, meaningless game, they had Patrick Mahomes play. But I mean, gave you a taste of what it's going to look like. And then year two, look at his numbers in year two.
But isn't it? But think about what you just said, though, right? Like, those are two pretty damn good examples. And I understand that not every case is exactly the same. But the Green Bay situation, times two, by the way, Aaron Rodgers, then into Jordan Love. And Jordan Love still has his whole career ahead of him. But last year, you know, there were enough high moments where you think, okay, maybe he benefited from watching Aaron for a couple of seasons. Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, and on the other examples, to where you would think that other teams would also try to duplicate that strategy. But instead, it favors more heavily in the opposite direction, where you throw these guys in the fire game one.
Well, I think, first of all, because I think a lot of these teams that are drafting high in the draft don't know what the hell they're doing anyway.
That's why they're picking high.
Right, which is not fair to the kids. How it works. And Dave yelled at me. I'm like, in what other business does that make sense? Where you graduate from college, you come out of MIT, you're the most, you're the best and the brightest, and you're forced to take a job with the worst company. It's not what you would do.
No.
It's not in your best interest, but that's what happens in sports, is best player ends up going to usually the worst team. And it's, I think the owners are usually involved sometimes with those decisions, right, where they're forcing their coach to get, you know, have the kid go out and play. You think Frank Reich really wanted to draft Bryce Young?
No,
and then once
not.
He did say to himself, "Yeah, Bryce Young's ready." No, probably not. But Bryce Young played, and there's only a handful of kids that can get their way through that and come out on the other side, right? And actually figure out how to make it work,
right? So they're not going to be doomed moving forward.
Like, right, they're not going to be like so broken that
damaged goods.
They can't be fixed,
like a Zach Wilson situation,
right? Like, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, they try to ruin him in year one.
Well.
I mean, that was a disaster in Jacksonville. And some kids can do it, and for the most part, most can't. So if you don't, if you have a guy that you're paying $40 million to anyway, and he's playing well and the team is winning, I think you're fine letting the kids sit on the bench and just learn.
Let's say hi to Jordan in the car. He's up next here on 98.7. What's up, Jordan? How are you?
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Good, Jordan. What's up?
I want to get on this conversation about the Giants. I mean, Daniel Jones is out of the question. He's done, in my head, big Giants fan. But what is the biggest thing a rookie quarterback needs? They need position players around them. And we could all say the Giants have zero position players. Now losing Saquon Barkley, wide receivers are – like you mentioned yesterday, they haven't had a thousand-yard receiver over the past 5 years. They draft the quarterback number six. They're basically having him doomed because he has no one to throw to. Unless they're going to say, okay, we're going to get a quarterback at six and trade for a guy like T. Higgins. But you've seen across the league how these rookie quarterbacks come into year one. Joe Burrow crushed. You guys just said Trevor Lawrence tried to kill him year one, and then they come in year two. They got Joe Burrow. They got him Chase. They got him T. Higgins. and all these guys that need position players around them. You put someone on this Giants team, a new quarterback with no position players.
Yeah, but Jordan,
it's
no
not going to get us anywhere.
But Jordan, that's exactly why I'm saying you don't have to play him in year one. The way you're set up with Daniel Jones and the amount of money you're paying him, and on top of that, you have Drew Lock sitting there as the backup. You don't have to pay him, so you can go through the entire draft and add talent to this team, and you got a whole other offseason to add talent to this team when the kid will eventually play.
And remember, Daniel Jones didn't even play as a rookie. Not that, I mean, he didn't start right off the bat because Eli was a starter. So he came in, you know, and had to pick his spots. But
actually had a really good rookie season.
Wasn't bad. I mean, that first game against Tampa Bay was great for him down there. And he helped him win the game.
He threw for 24 touchdowns his rookie season.
But
that's a damn good rookie season.
And then you look at what happened around him, though, and the organization failed to add to it with all the upheaval. Coaching changes, you name it, and that's why we're at this position right now where he's likely playing out the string as a member of the New York Giants. Still more for us to do. We'll continue the football conversation. We also have Sim that we have to do in the final hour, plus the three stars. It's Dan and Rick, DNR 98.7 ESPN. Now a word from True Green. Are you ready to elevate your lawn game without breaking the bank? Well, True Green has been the trusted choice for over 2 million homeowners for over 50 years. Visit TrueGreen.com today and discover the easiest and affordable way to achieve a pro-level lawn guaranteed. Plus, enjoy True Green's verified price matching, ensuring you get the best lawn for the best price. Visit TrueGreen.com and transform your lawn effortlessly. That's TrueGreen.com. Your dream lawn is just around the corner.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN New York app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.